My name's Devin. I'm a yoga teacher in Portland. I teach mostly at the People's Yoga. Through that work, I started wanting to investigate using language more and in different ways to help people work with their bodies and work with all the layers of themselves so they could use the yoga tools more in the world. So that's where I come from.
And I'm Chris. I am a philosophy teacher. Devin and I have done yoga together for some time now, and we've also been having these conversations for some time now. We thought we'd do those publicly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our show is Yoga for the Body Politic. Devin sort of invented it, so she's going to say what that means.
Years ago, when I started being more activist than I had been before that, that increased activism for me came mostly out of my yoga practice. So I was noticing a process in myself that was being actively limited by not engaging that process outside of the yoga studio. Or I was engaging that process, that investigative process, in my relationship to my kids and in my relationship to other kids and other people in my community. Then the next natural step was to engage with people who I don't know. I was using the same tools. So I started to think of that as the body politic, the people and the relationships that I share, that I'm a part of, whether I am noticing it or not, has everything to do with, works with similar principles as the ways that I share power and resources and comfort and strength and space inside my body.
I'll add to that little bit. So one of the places in which the connections that Devin was talking about became more interesting or apparent to me was in the whole election cycle of last year when I went to yoga classes. Sometimes people would be like, oh, this is, we can commit to this social activism through doing yoga or through having a reflective practice like meditation. While that's true, it also seemed like a way to comfort yourself that you are having some sort of positive reaction while sort of not doing anything about it. Mm-hmm. Or being like, well, I've done my class for the day, so that's also my work in providing justice in the world and recognizing, you know, whatever. And while that can be true, I think it's also easy to just let that be the end of it, the 1 hour class that you went to. Our project, as we've talked about it, has been how to make it come outside of the classroom, mm-hmm. how to make that like the foundation for other action in our communities and for ourselves.
Yeah. One of the things that I really noticed, and I've talked about this for years, is like, okay, over here, I'm in this more social, external aspect of myself. Those are more often activism spaces, where I wear a name tag and it says, hi, my name is, on it. And I usually sit in like a folding chair or another chair in an office kind of space. Or I'm in a very public space and I might not even share my name, but there's a kind of broadcasting that happens through signage and through slogans and language.
Yeah, like when we were at the march.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's the all the way the other side of it where I'm in the yoga room. A lot of times people don't know each other's names. People are turned very inward and are attending to their bodies in this sort of receiving way, receiving information about how they feel and being engaged with what is real for them in the moment and almost trying to take a break from being performative in their bodies. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking, where are the spaces where these things are being braided together?
Right.
Where there's overlap, Because my activism in within myself, my desire to have the truth about the world known by more people, to have the undercurrents and the coding that is in language, especially in the white spaces that I inhabit, be perceived for what it is, and to have people slow down and tune in to what they're doing with their bodies when they're using dominating behaviors, when we're letting each other off the hook by norming oppressive structures. I found myself using yoga, the yoga stuff inside of me, to stay, to tolerate my own discomfort when I'm triggered by being white, or by being a woman, or by having power in some other way, holding some other form of privilege, or experiencing suddenly a lack of power in an interaction with someone. Being able to tolerate those experiences enough to have introspection and to encounter the comfort of, oh, there's truth here. And the truth allows me to relate to other people who have these experiences of oppression or experiences of dominating. The yoga tools felt so useful to me that I wanted to be able to share them with people so that they could show up better, show up more, show up as more of their whole selves. But also I wanted to have, like you were saying, Chris, have the non-performative, spontaneous, honest, physiological response to injustice take center stage.
Yeah.
So that there was less of, we know what's good and we should make that happen.
Right.
Or we know what's bad and we should erase it. Which was a lot of what I was getting from whatever my activism emails that I get that are saying, they're almost manipulative to me in the language that's used and how they're trying to get me to take an action. I feel that the actions that increase a sense of belonging for more people in the world are inherent to me as a human.
Yeah.
Uncovering them, getting some of the more habitual or frightened responses out of the way, or being able to stay through those responses to get to these more inherent ways of sharing belonging. That process felt like a process that had to happen in a group.
Yeah.
And so we started having the body politic talk to get some language to try to share together. Because I've been a teacher, you've been a teacher, but so often that's very top down.
Right.
Me telling you what works, what doesn't. And increasingly my yoga teaching has been, how do we just get a bunch of stuff out of the way so that we can have more authentic experiences of support and engagement with each other and of belonging and trust?
Yeah. So we started meeting. We realized that we were developing a certain type of structure and language, and this became more and more clear as people that we knew less well started coming and couldn't as easily take part in our conversation because we already had this built between us. So one of the goals that we have for this podcast is to externalize that structure and language that we've developed with each other and with some of the other people who've been part of those conversations. So, yeah, I'd like to say a few things about the structure and language that we're hoping to impart and make use of throughout both this particular episode and the rest of them, and sort of the strengths and weaknesses of having a structure and language for this type of work. So when I teach philosophy with my students, this is one of the first things I talk to them about too. For a lot of us who are invested in this type of work, like noticing just action and unjust action and hierarchies of power or domination, we already have these nuanced, complex ideas and experiences and reactions, and we want to communicate those. But it's really difficult to do that because they are complex and individual. And although they can be very widely shared, each person still has their own experience within them. And the same is true for philosophy. Like, everyone's doing philosophy all the time. And so to provide a structure and language to give us a means to share those can be really powerful. And that's like a big piece of the feminist movement in the 70s, for instance, was giving language to, like, what is sexual harassment? Because a lot of women were experiencing it, but there wasn't literally language to talk about what was happening. This happens a lot, and that's why structure and language can be really powerful, because it can help groups come together, it can help us identify what's going on, mm-hmm. and it can give us a means to keep the momentum going. And that can be really important and powerful. So that's one of our goals throughout this process. But it's also, I think, necessary to acknowledge the limitations of structure and language. And I think a way that I can do that is to give an example from my own experience of gender, which is as a cis woman. There are as many different ways to understand womanhood as there are people who are women, and probably people who exist in the world, because people who aren't women have understandings of what women is also. But we know what we mean when we say woman, so there's also a shared concept that's happening. So when I say that I'm a woman, or that I identify as a cis woman, what I mean is the physical aspects of my body match up with an understanding of myself in terms of social ideas of gender and womanhood. That doesn't mean that when I put on this woman shirt, it fits exactly the way I want it to. Like, it's a little bit loose in some places and a little bit tight in others, and maybe the color is not quite right or something mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. So it's not always comfortable. Sometimes it's really uncomfortable, or feels unsafe, or feels really wrong and twisted. But the reason I continue to use this identifier is because using it gives me a power to stretch it and to tighten it and to change the color in a way that I wouldn't have access to if it weren't the language that I chose to use myself. So although it can be limiting and restricting because it's not exactly the thing that I mean, it can also be liberating because I can make it my own in a way, and because I can talk to other people about the way that they make it their own and the way that they see me make it my own. So that's what I mean when I talk about the strengths of having a shared language mm-hmm. and the limitations of having a shared language. And the structure goes along with that, mm-hmm. too.
And as we go forward with this, we want to use a tool that we've been using in our in-person meetings that I will tend to refer to as our live body politic. You can have an invitation to that. That'll be something that we extend to the community of listeners to find their way to being in space and community with us in conversation.
Either in person or
internet engagement.
Yeah.
One of the practices that we use is finding a word and investigating mm-hmm. the sensory experience of the word. Like, what is the embodied narrative around the word? You know, how is it used on us mm-hmm. and against us mm-hmm. or to motivate us? And then what is our real experience in the sense of what do we find in our tissue when we stay with ourselves for a while around the concept and our experiences of the concept?
Right.
And so that's something that we'll do with individual words going forward. Finding those words is something that's interesting to us, yes. and it's a place where we would love to have feedback.
Yeah.
We did one recently on hope mm-hmm. because there was a lot of that in activism language. Mm-hmm. And we were like, I don't know what that word means.
Yeah.
Do you know what that word means? Mm-hmm. What does it feel like? So we did this whole process that we're going to try to teach you how to do, teach you how we do it, and then hopefully learn from how you do it around individual concepts, right. words, and also experiences that sometimes we don't have good words for, and we have to go looking for what are the words that describe these shared experiences
yeah.
of humanity, of oppression, of domination, of shame and also of encountering that truth feeling underneath shame that lets us feel connected and experience belonging.
Yeah.
So today we want to just do the work on feeling in and do some sort of like teaching and sharing and modeling around how do we feel in so that we have content to do the structure to, because we have to have a bunch of sort of raw sensation to be able to pick through it and say, mine looked kind of like this and it felt kind of like this and it reminded me of, so that we have a sense of how to choose our embodied authentic experience over what we think is supposed to happen and what we're supposed to feel.
Right. What we would like to do is that Devin is going to lead me, Chris, in a guided meditation. We've been calling it spaciousness and specificity, but it could also be understood, I think, as the structure and language stuff that I was saying, like the limits of it and the power of it or the empowerment of it. I'll be sitting here investigating as she is asking questions, and I think she'll be doing that too to some extent, and we invite you to do it with us. My answers will be different than yours because I'm a different person than you, but it'll hopefully give you some structure for what we are trying to practice, like in with our voices and the sort of thing that we do in person when we're doing it in a physical space. So if you are in a place that is comfortable, lay down or sit down or take a little walk or something like that. We're very much in favor of moving your body to figure out what's going
on
inside.
It's true. When we do this live, it's like everybody's allowed to do whatever they want. One of the people who came was like, oh God, this is like a writer's room, because we're in a meeting, we're talking to each other, but we don't use chairs.
Yeah.
And we're like, sometimes you have to put your legs up or sometimes you need to take a walk.
Yeah.
Or
someone's doing like Warrior 3 over there. So if that feels good to you, that's the thing to do. And if you are in a space where that's not possible, like you're driving, you could join us a little bit or come back and listen.
So you can be in 20% in terms of your own investigation. And it's also okay to let it be like abstract.
So here we go.
Yeah.
I'm going to ding us.
So, as Chris was saying, I'm going to do the language and she's going to do the sensing. And of course, I'm also sensing and I'm following some of my own cueing to make the cueing accurate and real and because it feels good. But she's going to do very little languaging while she's sensing. And that is a very on-purpose thing. One of the biggest tools that we use in yoga to increase connection is the tool of decreasing judgment and assessment. So even though I'm going to ask Chris some questions about what she experienced or is experiencing, her primary work is just to be with the feelings that she has while she's having them. And that's in a very simple sense. And those feelings will change, and she might even move in response to those feelings, but she doesn't have to turn any individual sensation into anything else. There's no need to correct or steer the experience. She always has the option of sort of coming out to whatever percentage. So she can always open her eyes if they're closed, or move her body, or tone down the amount of sensing she's doing to keep herself comfortable and safe feeling. So you can just feel your seat. And that is any contact that you have with a supporting surface. And go ahead and be specific about the location of contact where you are getting support from the earth through the floor, a chair, a wall. If that contact encounters you in a firm way, or a soft way, and what the sensation of support is like. You might notice temperature, pressure, a sense of absorption or blurring at the boundary between you and the surface. Or a sense of rigidity or tension. You can be in your attention even more specific by going to one particular place where you meet a supporting surface, and letting your attention sort of coalesce in that place. This is an action kind of like zooming in. Again, you might notice temperature, pressure. You might have other sensations, which we sometimes call thoughts, that connect this location to another place or time. And you might feel in this specific place, and you may need to sort of return again and again to this place as you get called away by other sensations or other times, memories. But we'll say that all of those other sensations and other times and other memories are included in the experience that you're having. And all the time that you are zoomed in, you're also breathing. And the breath is happening in and to the whole body, your whole self, and even the space around you is included in your breathing in and your breathing out. And the breath in that way is a constant invitation to zoom out. And you might find that one part of your breath the inhalation or the exhalation gives you that zoom out feeling a little bit more. Or that the mind, as it travels, again, to other parts of the body or to thoughts or memories, that helps you feel for the zoom out, for the bigness of your experience. And that bigness we often refer to as spaciousness. And yet we can return to specificity, to the zooming in sensation, without excluding or ignoring any of the rest of our experience. And you may find that there's a part of your breath that helps you have the clarity of specificity, that lets you be quiet a little bit. And you can follow that part of the breath into the place you found before, where contact is made. And even in that place, right, there's no way to hold the experience still. The sensations are always moving, fluctuating. Our perception happens in waves. And the breath is steadily offering attention that is focused and quiet and localized, so that we can feel what is right here, and at the same time, we can include the other part of the breath, the other part of our experience. Which might even feel sort of noisy or layered.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. That was a really different experience for me than my usual experience of yoga or zazen.
Right? Auditorily performative inner sensing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll do just a relatively quick unpacking of what it was like for Chris to be in there, which obviously is influenced by studio life.
Yes.
Here. And maybe you'll get some sense from her responses of what we're looking for, right? What we're after. Because like Chris was saying, her experience of gender or your experience of the meditation that we just did is real, whether you can give me evidence of it or not. It's more real in its moment-to-moment actuality than it can be in any reporting. And yet, this is what we have that we can share together.
And practicing that gives us a means for action in a situation that is requires action.
Yeah. Practicing bringing up the experience and turning it into language.
In a relatively comfortable space.
Yeah. Is really good practice for practicing bringing up the experience and turning it into language when things are more
uncomfortable or more pressing.
Okay. I wanted to ask some questions about the parts of your breath.
Yeah.
Because I did bring that up a couple times.
So my practice this morning was really breath focused. That gave me a place to start. My feeling is that it has this, well, sort of two homes, one in my belly where the hara or the, what's the
Chinese? Dantian.
Dantian, mm-hmm. which is like between the belly button and the pelvic bone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or in like yoga Ayurveda, it's the second chakra.
So that's one of the homes. And then it sort of like moves up in sort of a serpentine smoothness out into its other home, which is out here. And my hand is like a foot in front of my face. So I was noticing that and thinking, why are the two homes in my belly and out here? Like the home is the whole thing because that's where it lives and travels. Mm. And the out here, hand in front of my face, it's a spacious place, unlike the specific place of the hara or dantian or second chakra in my belly. So noticing that it moved between these two, and it wasn't just those two. They're not like bookends. The whole thing is the breath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting hearing you say like more spacious. It made me think about the sort of yin-yang experience of like the dark, deep, warm and the out light visible.
Yeah. And the other sort of visual explanation I have for that experience is when I'm breathing out, it's like a flower opening and receiving like light and air and other things flowers need to thrive. And when it's coming back into the belly, it's closing in and getting dark and still and like collecting or resting, which is the other thing it needs to thrive.
That does have that yin yang quality. I like that you mentioned that your practice this morning had this breathing aspect, because Chris was doing zazen this morning. She's doing her meditation practice. And it's something that I want to address. Chris and I both have sensing practices, yoga sensing practices, and also stillness sensing, like movement practices and stillness practices. And we both have experience using language to talk about those practices. And still, we're like riffing all the time. We're just trying to find words and like, oh, I don't know, it's not exactly like this. Is it like this? But we have a level of engagement around it that comes from practice. And this kind of sensing practice, I know as a teacher, can feel very boring and flat when we don't have experience being curious in this way.
Right.
And so I'm often, as a teacher, wanting to really give permission and acknowledgement to how hard it can be to get sensory content to work with. It can feel like, yeah, that's my body. It's sitting in a chair. also there's some other things I'm thinking about. Oh, yeah, I'm sitting in a chair. I feel like I'm sitting, you know?
Right, right.
And that happens to me, too, as I'm slowing down. So the invitation, the sort of reminder that all of your experience is included in the practice experience really helps me feel like, okay, so you didn't have like a, you know, serpentine yin-yang breath space, maybe. Maybe you had like the chair's hard. I'm irritated.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like mm-hmm. this is taking a long time.
Yep.
Should I fast forward? I might miss something good. That's an experience. Like that's a real whole experience that you can pay attention to and be interested in. And
it's included.
It's included.
It's part of the
thing. And
that
means like you have feedback. You got feedback. You got the content of the exercise. This is what your content looks like.
And my experience also included my legs are slightly different lengths right now because I'm wearing one shoe and not the other. My right leg felt very supported and stable.
Mm.
And my left leg did not because it was trying to reach or it was trying to clench. And so I noticed it in my toes pressing on the floor, trying to move some of the tissue up where my hip was clenching mm-hmm. because it was unsupported.
Mm-hmm.
And I also noticed a lot of, oh no, I forgot to say the thing before that I wanted to say. And when I practiced in the car, it sounded so much more elegant to me than when I said it right now.
Right, right. And that...
So I make it sound like it was all this beautiful experience of my serpentine yin-yang flower opening breath, but mostly it was panic.
But both.
But both.
But the cool thing is that it's both.
Yeah.
And one doesn't mean that the other one isn't there. We get to notice and experience both, and we can surface both. And that's a big part of using these practices to be honest with each other, to be more honest with ourselves, and to be more honest with each other, is that we extend this trust to ourselves and to each other, that beautiful things are happening, and we are
and
practicing,
things are happening.
And it's rich, and it's also like, I'm going to clunk along and be my proud self, and I'm going to be stuck in my demographics and my historical experience of how other people respond to my body.
And it's also true, like Devin and I have a lot of intimacy from our friendship, and I know that she can help me and will in herself hold the space for me to say, here's this beautiful experience of my breath and this beautiful experience of my panic and leg discomfort. They're both true. That's a hard place to come to, even in intimate relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Much less when someone is swearing at you or you're observing something that is uncomfortable and painful and you don't know what's the thing to do right now.
Or you're having a shame experience and someone else is not even noticing you.
Right.
Or like you suddenly realize that you've been being a total asshole in a like pre-programmed way, right? And then have to try to do better right away.
Yeah.
While you still have someone's attention.
I had an experience like that at the grocery store yesterday.
Yeah?
Yeah. There was a woman who was giving wine samples. Both me and the woman have large bodies. And there were these two men who were with us taking the wine samples.
Yeah.
And since it's January, they were talking about their New Year's resolutions, which involved losing weight. And they were talking with each other about how much weight they'd lost and what their diets were like. It was extremely clear to me that they didn't notice me and the other woman at all.
Yeah.
Like, the other woman was existing to pour them wine, and I don't think they even knew that I was there at all. And it was uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting there, well, standing there, like, do I do a thing now? Because this is uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And they aren't noticing that they're making it uncomfortable for me and this other woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I caught the woman's eye at one point, and my face must have been like, what are these guys? What?
Yeah.
And she was like, yep, that sucks. After the guys left, we chatted a bit, and she said that I looked just like one of her friends. She gave me a coupon for a tasting. the experience was both uncomfortable and unpleasant, and I didn't like it, and really nice because it was like this small mundane trauma that happens all the time. And there was this woman there who was having the experience with me. Then we made it nicer for each other. So it was both icky and really pleasant.
Right. One of the things that I really want to lift up in that is that you and she made the important connection in the ick.
Right.
If we are not allowed in ourselves to acknowledge the little trauma that's happening, so often it means we don't get to make the bridge to being tender with ourselves and with each other. And so a big part of this practice of just noticing our bodies is noticing all the things that happen physiologically to us when we are feeling that our basic humanity is being betrayed or our basic belonging in the club of humanity is being shown to be not good enough, not quite enough. That kind of noticing discomfort, we have to have something else to notice also, right? We have to have, I'm sitting in a chair, my breath goes in and out, I'm still okay. So we can even allow ourselves to acknowledge the little traumas that are happening all the time, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That was a good story.
Yeah.
Thanks.
It was such an experience of both. It was both like icky and I don't like it and pleasant and I do like it.
Yeah.
And you were right to say the reason that we could have that connection was to notice that we both didn't like it.
Right. And I think, too, it's important to say, like, who knows all the ways that that situation could have gone down and, like, what witty or strong thing you could have said that, like, would have been so educating to these men. But we're not even really here to do that.
Right.
Like, when we do this process, it's not like, let's come up with the lines that we're going to use.
Right.
It's really about not abandoning our own humanity.
Right.
And
the humanity
at tough times and the humanity of the people that we're with, and especially the more vulnerable people that we're with.
Because it was really my sense that these guys were like not bad guys. They just like ran into each other in the grocery store and were catching up and being friends, and that was their way of friending.
Right. And even if they are bad guys, they're not your job.
Right. They're not my job.
But that woman was kind of your job in the sense
that
like you had an authentic feeling of companionship with her and of seeing her humanity and wanting to join her.
Right. And that was the thing that I thought later was when I was standing there before the woman and I made the connection, I was like, what can I say? Like, what is the thing to do now? And after this experience, when I was reflecting on it, I thought, oh, I failed to take an action. And then I realized that I hadn't. Like, the woman and I took the action together of having the connection. That's one of the things we've talked about before, too, is what the nature of action is. Because there wasn't an action, like a correct specific action to take.
Especially because in that situation, you were one of the vulnerable parties.
Right.
And so to have this process be a process by which we give you more responsibility as a vulnerable party is not, like, interesting to me.
Right.
But in that situation, it's so tempting for us to not acknowledge the person who's sharing in our discomfort because it makes us more uncomfortable. And that action of staying in your body and making a place for her to have the body she has and be present in it and have what is shared without putting anything in particular on her or making her embarrassed or outing her in whatever way, that is, it's what I'm interested in the yoga where you guys are all in a body together and power is being shared. And when you're cut off from her, it gives the dudes even more power.
Right.
Because they have the power to keep you from being connected to your bodies or the power to keep you two from having like a pleasant interaction that's tender.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we're here to do.
Yep. That's our project.
And I'm glad we got there. Yeah. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Devin.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, everybody at KVU.
And thanks, listening people.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for trying this out. And thanks for any little moments that you have today or this week where you let yourself feel how you feel.
Yeah. Be our collective body.